This morning, we're going to continue our series called Failing Forward. And let me ask this question. Does anybody know what this is? It's a half pipe, right? Anybody here ever rode a half pipe? Yeah, I knew you would have ridden the half pipe. Anybody back here in the back? Any 30-something-year-olds or, okay, I'm 42. So any 40-something-year-olds grew up in the 80s, had a Mike McGill skateboard. If I know anybody, yeah, a Tony Hawk skateboard. You did not have a Mike McGill. Did you have a Mike McGill? You're the coolest little kid. But it is a skateboard thingy, you're right. And so that's exactly what we called it back in the 80s. Hey man, you got a skateboard thingy? Let's go. And so anybody heard of Tony Hawk? Okay. All right. So those are professional skaters. Back in the day, some of you had, I had a Tony Hawk board. I had a Mike McGill board. They were awesome. And I've ridden a half pipe. And what did you do the first time you dropped in on a half pipe? Actually, what did you do the first time you stood up on the platform, put your skateboard right here with the wheels clicked over like that, the truck right here, the rest of the board up here, back foot right here. You're up here. What did you do? Huh? You fell? Some of you, did anybody ride it the first time? I'll tell you what I did, man. I stood up there, and I went like this right here, and I was like, yeah, I don't think so. I ain't doing it. And so I just kind of walked down. I let my board go down. I'm like, okay, that's how it works. And I got down here in the flat area. I got on the board and kind of kicked a little bit and would come up and come back. That's how I started off doing that. But have you ever fallen on a half pipe? Yeah, it hurts. I got some bruises, not bruises, but I got scars on my knees from doing stuff like that. I think some of our kids, you need more scars on your knees, okay? Get outside and play, all right? Get outside and play. Go get dirty. Go eat some dirt. Wreck your bike. Jump something. Do something outside. It's 150 degrees outside. It doesn't matter. Your parents did it too. Get outside. And you're supposed to get hurt in the summertime. So you have permission to go have fun and get hurt, okay? All right, your parents are like, what are you talking about? Well, okay, get Aflac, you're good to go. So I dropped on a half pipe one time, and I wiped out right in what this area is called the flat. I just, boom, just ate it. When you wipe out, you learn something, right? Say yes. I hope you do, because if not, then you're just going to keep repeating stupid things over and over again. Now, some of us do that, right? Anybody guilty of just repeating stupid things over and over again? Say yes. Okay, so one thing I would know about this half pipe, all right, there is no vert on this half pipe because it doesn't have any straight down. But the most important thing that I would say this half pipe is missing, and if I was to drop in on it, well, first of all, I weigh 250 pounds, and it is not going to support me because if I drop in on it, I'm just going to drop through it, and that's not going to be good. But one thing that's most important that it is missing is a flat area down here. And so you need a little more flat down here to make it back up the other side without eating it right here in the middle. I know this because I've ridden half pipes like that with a little flat on it, and you know, flat nose is what I end up with. And so that's dangerous. You learn something when you fall. You learn something when you fail. You learn that that ramp's not going to hold you. You learn that your bike isn't really all that aerodynamic. You learn that it's not a good idea to hang on to the back of a truck going down the road like Michael J. Fox did in Back to the Future. Anybody ever do that? Don't let your kids know, but I'm sure there are some scars from that. I've done that as well. You learn that those things are difficult, and you learn how to move forward. So let me tell you a couple of stories very quickly. There's some individuals that are successful in business, that are successful entertainers, people that you may have heard of before. You ever heard of a man by the name of Harrison Ford? Okay. All right, so Harrison Ford, when he started out as an actor, he was a small-time actor, had small-time roles, and just wasn't doing very well, difficult to support his family. All these stories I'm telling you, I've researched on the internet, so they have to be true. So he's an actor and a carpenter at the same time. This man hires him to come put cabinets in his house. You know his name? George Lucas. Ever heard of him? Probably. George Lucas hires him to come and put cabinets in his house. And so he's putting cabinets in his house. He's telling him that he's an out-of-work actor. He's really trying. They're talking, blah, 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 back and forth. George Lucas is working on a little-known film called American Graffiti. And George Lucas says, hey, why don't you have, I'll give you a role in American Graffiti. And so he gets a role in American Graffiti, hits it off with George Lucas. Later on, George Lucas hires Harrison Ford to be a script reader for people who are auditioning for a little terrible movie called Star Wars. Never heard of it, I'm sure. So he begins to audition people who are read with people who are auditioning for Star Wars. And so he's working through that, and George Lucas like, this guy is really, really good. Let's give him a role. And what role did Harrison Ford get in Star Wars? Han Solo. And that ignited his career. A failure, what would look like a failure all the way up until that point. Just keep pushing through, right? Kids, have you ever seen that movie about the fish that gets lost? Finding Nemo. And when they get hung up in a net and they're like trying to get out of the net, what do they keep saying? Just keep swimming, right? Just keep moving. How's it go? There's a couple of girls back here, man. You guys nailing it. So just keep swimming. Just keep moving forward. There's an author you've probably never heard of. All of what I'm telling you is complete sarcasm. You've never heard of this author. Her name is J.K. Rowling. Wrote this little book that you've never heard of called Harry Potter. And she wrote this book and nobody wanted to publish it. Nobody would take it. During this time, she had the manuscript. Nobody wanted anything to do with it. She gets married. Her husband leaves. She's raising a child in almost poverty. Her mother dies. Things are just terrible. Nothing's working out for her. And she's not making any success on this manuscript that she has. And she goes to all of these publishers. Nobody wants anything to do with it. Finally, she comes to like this very small publisher. And the CEO takes the manuscript, apparently takes the manuscript home. He doesn't want to do anything with the book. But his 8-year-old daughter read the manuscript at home. And she's like, you've got to publish this book. This is a great book, Daddy. And so he publishes that book. Huge success, Harry Potter series, hundreds of millions of books sold, one of the most popular books definitely in London, in England. Have you ever heard of this little group that came out of England called the Beatles? Kids, have you ever heard of the Beatles? You're like, ah, I've got some Beatles in the back. There are Beatles in your backyard if you get outside and play. So this little band, those guys, they were practicing for years and years, for like 2 years together, practicing 10 hours a day, couldn't find anybody to produce their music. They were even told by one producer, you know what, guys, guitar music is on the way out. Ha! Press on, right? Don't, when you fail, just keep moving forward. Okay, so have you ever heard of this guy? His name is Reed Hastings. You ever heard of Reed Hastings? Most of you are like, no, I've never heard of him. But most of you in this room know what he did, okay? So Reed Hastings, back in 1997, was late turning in his VHS movie, and it cost him $40 in late fees. There's a lot of stuff right there we have to unpack for the kids in the room, okay? So kids, did you know that we used to have to watch movies on what are called VHS tapes? They were plastic like this, had plastic inside of them, and you would put it into what was called a VCR, okay? I remember when I was a kid, much like your age, we would go to the local convenience store and rent a VCR. Anybody ever rent a VCR? Yeah, some of you did. You would walk out of the store with this giant suitcase of a machine with a VCR in it, and you'd walk around. It looks like you were carrying the launch codes for a nuclear missile strike. You're walking through. You put it at home. You open it up, and you have to plug it in. And if you were lucky enough or wealthy enough to have a VCR in your home, you probably weren't smart enough to program it because it always blinked the time, right? Anybody feel me? You're there. So in 1997, Reed Hastings has a $40 late fee for one of those movies. That's incredible to think of. That'd be incredible today for sure. $40. Reed Hastings starts thinking, there's got to be a better way to do this. Apparently, he's been, you know, trying to figure out some things and make some money and all of that stuff. And so he's like, there's got to be a better way to do this. Today, you know Reed Hastings because most of you in this room have a subscription to Netflix. Reed Hastings basically put Blockbuster out of business, completely changed the model. When you fail, fail forward and keep moving. Don't get stuck. If you're any 8-year-olds here this morning, third grade, if you walk outside today on the way to the car and you fall down in the middle of the parking lot, don't stay there, okay? Get up. Keep moving. My 80-something-year-old grandmother is going to keep moving. She's faster than you if you just keep laying there. Don't stay in your misery. Don't stay in your brokenness. Don't stay in your mistake. Get up. Keep moving forward. So you've heard some of these people. You've heard of Netflix. You've heard of some of those things. Have you ever heard of a guy by the name of Harland David Sanders? You might know him as Colonel Sanders. See, Colonel Sanders was a guy that grew up in Kentucky, and he tried to be a car salesman, a tire salesman, an insurance salesman. He tried to do all kinds of different things, and then he wasn't successful at any of that. Then one day he opened a chicken stand on the side of the road in Kentucky. Things went crazy. He was so popular, selling chicken, and he invented this recipe and all of this. Then something happened that brought failure. Interstate came in, took all of the traffic away from his chicken stand, put it out on the highway, and he didn't have any customers anymore. So at 68 years old, and some of the little kids in here are like, man, that's really old. That's really old. That's like older than most of your parents, okay? 68 years old, Colonel Sanders starts going. You ever seen the show Shark Tank, where you got the investors, and you got the guy that comes in and tries to pitch his thing? Well, imagine 68-year-old Colonel Sanders going to 1,000 different Shark Tanks presenting his famous or his soon-to-be famous recipe for fried chicken. He's denied, denied, denied over and over and over again. Finally, somebody buys into it. He launches this chicken franchise and later sells it for like $15 million. And he's like 72 years old when all of that happens. Don't give up. So we love stories like that, don't we? We love stories like that of people that persevere, people that keep moving forward, people that look like they're down and out, but they get back up and they keep moving forward. The Bible's full of stories like that. The Bible is full of stories of men and women who look like they are down and out, but continue to move forward. They look like they've abandoned God, or they look like they've forgotten everything about who they're supposed to be. They look like the end is here, but their story doesn't stop there. They keep moving forward. And so, students, children, your parents know that they cannot stay stuck. They have to move forward. Now, most of the children, man, most of you guys are like, oh, I don't get stuck. I mean, things are great. I get up in the morning. Somebody makes me breakfast. Somebody makes me lunch. I do this. I do that. I watch some TV. I never go outside, blah, blah, blah. So your life is like awesome, but there's coming a day when you're going to get stuck. There's coming a day, and every adult in this room and everybody over the age of 12 or 13 know this. There is coming a point where something goes wrong and derails what you thought was going to happen. And we've all been there. And the tragic thing is we're there a lot of times in our relationship with God. You see, there are times in our relationship with God where we're not perfect. Anybody in this room perfect? Please raise your hand. I'd like to learn from you. Anybody? I am not perfect. You're not perfect. And so there are times in our relationship with God, and it happens on a pretty much on a daily basis, where you blow it, where you mess up. You cannot stay stuck. So again, the Bible's full of stories about people who are falling, who have failed, but they fail forward. And that's where we're headed for this series, as we're talking about failing forward. So today, I want you to turn to the book of John, chapter 21. John, the book of John, is my favorite book in the entire Bible. It's so good. So one ancient theologian said the book of John is shallow enough for a child to swim in, meaning that it's easy to understand. And at the same time, he said, it's also deep enough to drown an elephant. There's so many deep truths in the book of John. If you've not read it, I really encourage you to read that. If you're a brand new believer in Jesus, or you're investigating who Jesus is, read the book of John. It's my favorite book. You'll learn some great things that God came down to inhabit, to live amongst us, and his name was Jesus. God in the flesh, God incarnate, God with meat, came down to live with us. And in John, you'll find there are seven miracles. Kids say seven. You'll also find that there are seven sayings. Say seven sayings. Okay, and so the sayings are this. He says the word, I am. He says it seven times throughout the book of John. He says, I am. He's referring straight back to when Moses heard God speak. And God said, go and tell them to let my people go. And Moses said, who should I say sent me? And this voice is God speaking. The voice says, I am. And so every time Jesus, seven different times in the book of John, says, I am the bread of life, I am blah, 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 He's referring directly back to the fact that he is God. He is here. He is the Messiah. And that is why they want to kill him. There are seven miracles in the book of John. There are seven what are called signs. And every one of those signs point to Jesus fulfilling something in the law, point to Jesus as the one who is the Messiah that they were waiting for. The book of John is fantastic. Jesus does some amazing miracles. You read some stories like the woman at the well who had broken relationships, whether she was abused or she was the abuser, we don't really know. Probably she was the one that had been abused. She was disgraced, and she comes and she's getting water, and she ends up talking to Jesus, and Jesus just tells her some beautiful things about her, some things about who he is. You see these amazing pictures of Jesus. Goes all the way through. One day, Jesus hears about his friend Lazarus, who has died, and Jesus goes and raises him from the dead. It's an amazing, amazing piece of history. And then Jesus is arrested and taken prisoner. He's beaten. He's put on a cross. He dies, goes to the grave. 3 days later, he rises again. He comes back and talks to his disciples, and some of them didn't believe, but then they did believe, and it's an amazing story as it goes through. And you get to John 20, and you're like, Jesus lived. Jesus did amazing things. Jesus died. Jesus was buried. Jesus rose again. Victorious Jesus. That's a great story. Let's end it right there. But then we have chapter 21, which is like, where did chapter 21 come from? Because we could have ended it at chapter 20. It's like most preacher's sermons. You could have ended it a long time ago, but you just kept going, right? You're already thinking that. And so you get to chapter 20, and you hear again about this guy named Peter. Now, let me tell you what happened with Peter that you read in other gospels as well. So all leading up to Jesus' arrest, they're inside this building. They're inside this room, kids, and they're having a dinner with Jesus. And then Jesus basically tells them what's going to happen. And Peter says, I will never leave you, Jesus. I will never deny you. I'll never give up on you. I will always be there. Jesus, I will go with you to death. And Jesus looks at Peter and says, no, you won't. You're actually going to deny me, Peter, three times before the rooster crows. You're going to deny me three times before the rooster crows. So, I have today a rooster for us. So, kids, this is a rooster that I'm borrowing. He's pretty awesome. I'm just going to bring him out here so you can see him. And so, kids, I need to name the rooster. Can you help me name the rooster? Somebody name the rooster. Help me out. What's his name? Brian. He does like to crow. Let's name the rooster. We can call him Brian. We can call him what else? Rudy. I like it. The last service they said lunch. That's awesome. I was going to call him the Christian chicken based off of Chick-fil-A. It's funnier in the last service, but okay. Anybody else? Rudy? Let's go one more. Fried. Rudy Fry. This is Rudy Fry right here. Say hello to Rudy Fry. Good to see you, buddy. This rooster is amazing. Super calm, super chill. I actually, in the first service, walked out with him in my hands, kind of petting him, and then he tried to fly away, and I grabbed his legs and pulled him back in. It's a funny story, but it might be tragic if you saw it as a child. So I decided not to do that this time. And then I looked at my hand. You know what's there. You know what's there. So completely derailed the entire message of the first service. Glad you're in this one. Much better. So Jesus says, look, you're not going to go to death with me. You're going to deny me three times before the rooster crows. Now, in history, you learn, if you study about some of these things, cultural things, there actually was a man that was in the temple that would stand up three different times and cry out from the temple, it's time to worship, or it's time to sacrifice, or get ready to worship. So whether Jesus is talking about an actual rooster, or he's actually talking about a man that's standing in the temple that's going to cry out to Jerusalem to come and worship, regardless of either one of those scenarios, Jesus is absolutely right. Peter denies. And so the guards come in to arrest Jesus. They're in the garden. They take Jesus by force. Peter grabs a sword and swings it at the guard. What did Peter do before he was a follower of Jesus? He was a fisherman, not a swordsman. And so he swings at Jesus. He doesn't swing at Jesus. That'd be bad. He swings at the guy that's arresting Jesus, misses his head, cuts his ear off. Jesus reaches down, picks his ear up, sticks it back on like Mr. Potato Head when you were a kid. It's a fantastic story. And you're like, that's not true. It is absolutely true. And this is an amazing thing to think about. Jesus is the one that created the ear. He actually created the head. And he's like, I've done this before. I'll just put this back together. And they arrest Jesus and take him off. It must be a cold night. Peter is standing by the fire, and there are a bunch of people gathered around the fire. And there's a little schoolgirl, much like your age, right there. And she looks over at Jesus, and she goes, aren't you one of, or looks over at Peter, and she goes, aren't you one of Jesus' followers? And Peter says, no. And then later on, somebody else asks him the same question. Aren't you a follower of Jesus? Aren't you a Galilean? And he's like, absolutely not. And then he's asked again for the third time, aren't you a follower? Aren't you a disciple? Aren't you somebody that follows Jesus? And he says, absolutely, most emphatically, I am not a follower of Jesus. Like as you read it, the language gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And it's almost to the point that he's actually cursing at this person. I do not know Jesus. And at that moment, the rooster crowed. All three services, not a crow yet. We've been working on this. Perfect. Those guys in the back are awesome. So this morning, I live on one of these famous hills here in Claremont on the edge of a hill. So to get down to the garage, I have to walk downstairs. And Sherry, I didn't tell you this morning. I don't know if you heard this, but I'm going down the stairs right after I kissed you bye. I'm going down the stairs and I hear this, and I think it's like a kid. Did you hear it? Because your bedroom's downstairs. And I was like, why is there a kid screaming in the house? Who is this kid? And then I stopped and I froze and I heard it again. And then I realized I've got a rooster in the garage, which I don't typically have. And so I walk out there and I'm like, you're not a very good rooster because you don't crow very well, but he's learning. He's learning. So we've been working on this timing thing, and that's when the rooster crowed. There it is. So at that moment, Peter looks up. Kids, check this out. At that moment, Peter looks up and he sees Jesus' face. Now imagine what that must have been like. Peter was bold and brash and brave. Peter was loyal. But Peter had no idea about the sin and the flesh that lived in the inside of him. And he did not understand that when the pressure came, he would completely deny Jesus. And so Peter is wrecked. Peter is broken. And Peter is very similar to you and to me. There have been times in your life and in my life where I have sinned grievously against the Father. And I'm like, why did I do that? Why am I doing these things that I don't want to do? Why do I sin? Like, why do I run to those things? And it's in that moment that you will have a decision to make. And if you want to fail forward, it's in this moment that you're going to need to know some of the truths that we're going to talk about here in just a moment. If you want to move from that position, you can wallow in the mire and the brokenness. But if you want to make progress, you got to know some things about Jesus. And that's where you pick up in John 21. It's almost like the end of a movie. You ever been to a movie that then they roll the credits, you think the movie's over, and you stick around for a little bit, and then there's another piece to the movie? It's like another ending to the movie. I'm so glad there's another ending to John chapter 20. There's a chapter 21. It says this. Pick up in verse 2. Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. Kids, say, I'm going fishing. Say it really loud. Go. Awesome. They said to him, we'll go with you. Say, we'll go with you. Say it loud. All right. You guys got to work on that, man. Louder. Louder. They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. And here's the thing. At that point, Peter is saying, I have failed Jesus so badly that Jesus must never want to use me again. I've used up all the grace that I could ever have. I've blown it. My life is over. I'm going to go back to the things that I knew before. And aren't we like that? When we fail, when we blow it, don't we get to a point where we're like, the guilt and the condemnation that comes in on that? If you guys see people leaving, that's the youth band. They're going to come back up here and lead us in worship in a little bit. It's okay. They're not leaving because they hate the message. But you've been there, right? Where you failed, and then the enemy comes in and says, you're no good. You're no good. You can't do anything beneficial for God. You made a commitment and you failed. You said you would never do that and you did. You said you would never go there and you went there. And you went there excited about it. And you could never, ever be a follower of Jesus. Because followers of Jesus don't do things like that. I don't know if you've ever been to that point. I have felt that condemnation. You know what? God does not bring that condemnation. The enemy is bringing that condemnation. If I'm a follower of Jesus, Romans says there is no condemnation. There may be guilt. Guilt is different. There may be sorrow. Sorrow is different. Condemnation is something that's completely different. That comes from the enemy, and that is beating you down. And what happens at that point is you have a choice to make. I can run to those things that have brought me comfort and satisfaction. I can run to those things that bring me approval and security. And that, if you think about it, is where all of our sin really revolves around: approval, comfort, satisfaction, security. What brings me those things? And I run to those things and I cling on to those things and I run away from God when God is there saying, I love you, I'm here for you, and you're over here all jacked up in the mind thinking, I can never be with him. I completely failed him again. And you know what? Jesus knew. He said, Peter, you can't. You can't be perfect. You're not going to be perfect. I'll be perfect for you. You're going to fail. One thing, if you want to move forward, one principle you need to understand, don't let the enemy beat you down to where there's condemnation that you can say, that you'll say, I'm no good in the kingdom. I'm no good to Jesus. I'm no good for God, and just live in that mire and that muck. Don't live there. Another thing you need to think about, what is Peter's friends, what did they say? When Peter says, I'm going fishing, what did they say? They said, I'm going with you. You got an incredible amount of influence. Could it be that in your wallowing in sin and muck and mire that you actually take people with you? Or could it be this, and this may also be the case for a lot of you, for a lot of us, I'll put myself in there too, a friend of ours, a loved one, a colleague, somebody is running from God. And you're like, you know what? That looks like fun. That looks good. I'm going to run with him. And so Peter, the one that's supposed to be a fisher of men, one that is supposed to be leading people to Jesus, is actually leading people away from Jesus. And it's a long night. It's a long night of nothing. They fish all night. Catch absolutely nothing. Let's pick up the story in verse 4. Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? I love the way Jesus refers to these grown men. He calls them children, like a daddy calling out to his child, son, daughter, affection. I love you. I love you. He says, do you have any fish? The emphasis there is, how's that working for you? How's that working out? You've had that advice given to you before, right? Or maybe you've used that with your children or your grandchildren. He said, yeah, you're doing those things. How's that working? It's not working very good. I've caught nothing. It's been a long night of nothing. And in that moment, Jesus says, how about casting your net on the other side of the boat? they catch this huge amount of fish. And one of the disciples is like, that's Jesus on the shore. And Peter, the big, bold, audacious Peter, jumps in the water. Even though he's got a perfectly good boat, he jumps in the water and swims about 100 yards to get on shore. And the boat follows behind him. And they get there and they drag this huge load of fish on the beach. And when they see Jesus on the beach, he's got a campfire. And at that campfire, he's barbecuing some fish. I love a good fire. I spent last week and part of this week in Yellowstone National Park camping. It was awesome. And it was also like 33 degrees. It was freezing. Some of my camping party, one of my children, I will not tell you who he is, but he was leading worship a while ago, didn't really research what the weather was going to be like and showed up with 7 tank tops. And I was like, you can layer those things up, but you're still going to be cold. So they get to the fire, and Jesus has got this great fire going, and he calls them children, and he invites them in to breakfast. And the one thing that's missing, and it's the one thing that if you're not a follower of Jesus, if you're not a follower, you think that God is all about condemnation, beating you down. And the one thing that's missing from that scenario is that he doesn't beat them down. He doesn't berate them. He doesn't yell at Simon. He doesn't tell him, you're a failure. You're terrible. He doesn't speak to him like your dad may have spoken to you. He doesn't speak to him like that person that you respected tore you down. He doesn't speak to them that way. He actually takes Peter by the side. And there's this beautiful fire. And I can just imagine there's the fires over here. And Jesus wraps his arm around Peter. And they begin to walk down this path. And when we were camping in Yellowstone, we had this fire and this campsite and everything. And we were tent camping, which is awesome. It's not a bed and breakfast because we didn't have a bed. And our breakfast was kind of non-existent. But it was still good nonetheless. And so we had this fire. And you would walk down this little path. And down the little path would be the Madison River, and it was amazing. And then over there would just be these mountains, and it was awesome. And I can just imagine, as I knew I was preaching this message, I was imagining what it would be like for Jesus just to stand there with Peter and say, ask him 3 questions. He said, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? First off, he goes, do you love me more than these? And what are the V's that he's talking about? Do you love me more than all the fish and all the stuff that you're going after? Do you love me more than all the things you run to? Do you love me more than all the things that have left you empty over and over and over again? Or Peter, do you love me more than all these other disciples? Do you love me? And Peter says, you know I love you. You know I love you. And then he asks him the question again, do you love me? And he says, I love you, Jesus. And then he asks him the 3rd time. Why is he asking him 3 times? Because he denied him 3 times. But he's not asking him 3 times so that he could just like beat it into him. He's asking him because he needs to remind Peter. He needs to remind Peter. He needs to remind him that you will never be perfect. I'll be perfect for you. I love you, and I'm going to use you. Wherever you're at in your relationship with God, you know you're a sinner and you blow it. Don't stay there. Remember, the enemy is going to want to come in and condemn you and beat you down. Remember that either you're leading someone towards this path of destruction or you're following someone towards this path of destruction. Remember that you'll never catch anything. It's a long night of nothing, and you as adults know what I'm talking about. You've had not just long nights of nothing, you've had long seasons of nothing, and some of you have had an entire life of nothing, and you've never been satisfied. And Jesus says, I know where satisfaction is. I know where comfort is. It's in me. And I can just imagine him calling you to the beach to have breakfast, to say, I love you. I love you. I know you're not perfect. You can't do it, but I can do it for you. That's the gospel. The gospel is not The gospel is not like the slogan for Home Depot, you can do it and we can help. That's not the gospel. The gospel is you can't do it, but Jesus can do it for you. Maybe you're sitting here this morning and you've heard a message like this all your life, but maybe today it actually makes sense. And you would say, right where you're seated, I need a God like that. I need a God that can satisfy those deep desires. I need a relationship with him. Right where you're seated, you could bow your head, close your eyes, confess to Jesus that I believe you died for me. I believe you rose again for me. I trust you. I put my faith, my trust, my whole life into your hands. I want you to be my Lord. A good word for it, a biblical word, is to repent. It means that I'm walking in this direction as a long night of nothing, away from everything that God would call me to. I'm walking away. What I've done is what all of us have done. We've taken our puny little fist, we shake it in the face of God, and we said, I don't want you to be my God. I'll be my own God. And there's a point in your life, like maybe right now you realize you're walking away trying to be your own God and it's never worked. It's always broken. And you repent. What the Bible means is you turn back. You turn and you walk towards Christ. You walk towards Jesus and you receive him. Maybe you've never done that. Maybe it makes sense to you this morning. Surrender to him right now where you're seated. Trust Jesus as your Savior. A lot of you in the room are seasoned believers. You've been a follower of Jesus for a long time, and you know what it means when the rooster crows, when you've blown it, when you've messed it up. Don't stay there. Man, don't stay there. We need you. The church needs you. Don't stay there. You're not out. God isn't looking for varsity players. He's not looking for that kid right there. That's a D1. That's a next level player. Jesus isn't doing that. He's looking at all of us and saying, none of them are going to even make the cut. But I love them anyway, and I'll bring them in. And he's calling you to remember that he loves you and to remind you that you really do love him too. This morning, we're going to sing one more song. It's a beautiful song. I think it really reflects well on what we're talking about this morning. I want you to do a couple of things. If you're not a Christian, I really want you to as you sit there, as you hear, as you pray, maybe as you talk, really investigate, do I have a relationship with God? Am I ready to do that? Confess to him that you want to serve him. And I want to say another thing. If you're a believer in Jesus, as we sing this song, I want you to realize that his love never fails. His love never runs out. His love never gives up on you. It's always there chasing after you. The book of Proverbs says, a man falls 7 times and he gets up 8. Get up. Follow Jesus. Remind yourself of who he is. Remind yourself of how much he loves you and how much you love him. Let's pray together, and the band will come out and close us out. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes. Father, this morning we just come to you. We are in awe of your grace and your mercy. We are amazed by your love. Father, thank you for loving us. We pray, Lord, that you would direct our hearts to follow after you. In Jesus' name, amen. Look at me real fast. Failure doesn't have to be the end of your story. See, failure doesn't have to be the end. And children, if you're taking notes like I hope you're doing, if you're going to fill in that blank that's called the bottom line, if you don't remember anything else, adults, if you walk out of here and you're like, what did that guy talk about? That's it. In a very short, tweetable statement, failure doesn't have to be the end of your story. Let me stand together and let's worship.